Whether you're just wrapping up the night shift or on your way to start the day, we got what you need.
Welcome to the morning shift.
It's the most mid team in history.
A whole new way to start your day with nationally televised reporter Tiffany Blackman.
Any pizza for me can be a personal.
Can't wait.
Former Falcons and Alabama offensive lineman Mike Johnson.
I've had my butt chewed by Nick Saban a few times.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
And Atlanta sports radio guru Bo Morgan.
You know who I am? I'm Squid Bill.
You tell him I'm coming. And hell's coming with me, you hear?
It's a new experience.
And a new take on a sports morning show.
The morning shift is on.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, here's Tiffany, Mike, and Bo.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, and this is Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike, Bo, and Tiff here with you, live here in the Kia studios with a whole lot to get to today. A lot, maybe like a 53-man roster to talk about. You guys made some predictions yesterday of what the Falcons would do, who would end up shaping out this group. And, you guys did okay. You did all right.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised. You guys did okay.
You don't be so hard on yourselves.
Yeah, I feel like I missed on a few that I don't want to say shocked, but they were surprises. I mean, we'll start right off the bat. If I didn't expect them to keep three quarterbacks, I didn't.
Wait, can I say that? You know, I thought it was a good idea.
You did say it was a good idea.
Okay.
I just didn't agree with you. But
still don't. Actually.
But still don't. To the point though, is I didn't think your reasoning was off in any way, shape, or form. I understood your reasoning and I thought it was logical. The problem for me, Mike, was that you had a log jam at a couple positions that I would have robbed the third quarterback spot from. That's what I would have said, you know what? I'll take my chances. I'll put an extra DB or an extra wide receiver on this roster instead.
Yeah, I did. Well, and let's just start off with the quarterback situation, because we've already pointed the ship in that direction. I am still shocked in a lot of ways that Taylor Heinicke is on this initial 53, and it's not that I don't think that Taylor's a good player, but I think when you look at certain reasons that people are kept on a roster – first of all, I think you look around the NFL and say, well, nobody can replace this guy. Well, I don't think that's necessarily true. Or you always look at the preseason stats and you go, man, they played their way onto this roster. Well, that's not really true either. Contract situation, there's a little bit of dead cap space, but not a ton, not enough to make you make the decision to keep a roster spot. And, you know, look, it's not like you don't have depth at that position at this point. Not that you don't think you'll need some long-term, but you just look at some of the other situations, some of the other names that are floating around. There are a number of veteran quarterbacks that were let go. So there's like four reasons that I could point to and say, this is surprising to me. But in the end, they valued what his input was in that room, and nobody in our seats right now is sitting in that room with the quarterback. So.
Well,
the only thing I can think to add is that you have a backup quarterback that has experience with this team for a couple seasons now. So I think that's a bonus, at least if you're going to keep three. You've got a guy that's familiar, even though new coaching staff, he's still familiar with this team.
I agree with you, Tiff, and I think it's a great point, but it is a new offense, right? And it's all 11 personnel, and you know we're going to continue to talk about the jump in 11 personnel that you'll see with this team and this offense, and it's just not the same scheme. It's not even remotely the same. And so I have a number of questions, man.
Well,
but I'm still not sure they won't try to move him at some point.
That's what I was about to ask you. Knowing what we know about how rosters work and how fluid a situation it can be for a guy and honestly the 53rd spot on there or anywhere in the bottom tier, is there how big are the chances that he is at some point cut in the next week before the season starts to add a person that maybe you didn't think would be out there or traded for a person you didn't think would be available or traded for a draft pick and then or just cut outright to get another player, like I said in the original, and then because of how everyone's kind of already solidified their second and third string quarterbacks, you're able to kind of stash him on the practice squad for another week.
Yeah, well, let me throw that right back at both of y'all and ask this question. If you were going to move Taylor Heinicke, what position would you be moving him for and at what price? And I think that's the question. I don't know that it's do you want to move Taylor Heinicke or could you move him? I think there'd be suitors, and I think you could pull the trigger on that. I think when you look at the flip side and ask yourself what position are you trading for or what position are you, you know, cutting for or whatever else it might be, I don't know the answer to that. And I think that there was a number of DBs that you and I thought would be on the roster that are not. Seems like if they wanted to go that direction, they could have. But I just don't know. I don't know what the end game would be if you do want to move on from him at this point, because I look around, you obviously feel good about your depth in the secondary and you feel good about your depth up front and at linebacker. So unless there's a receiver around
defense,
there, right?
That's what I was going to say. It would have to be on the offensive side of the ball. And if you're going to pick a position, it would definitely be the receiver position. You won at six anyway yesterday, right?
Yeah. I did, Tiff. I thought Chris Blair won if there was going to have six, I thought he had won that. I think it's wide receiver unless there's a tight end that you just think that is, hey, look at that guy. That guy can come in and help me because he's better than Ross Dwelly, who made the team. And I'm not sure that there's a guy out there. I'm just saying to me that would be, I mean, Irv Smith's out there. Maybe Irv Smith's a guy that tickles your fancy if you're one of the front office guys. But, yeah, a receiver, because I think there's some teams that have some good receivers that maybe didn't make their roster, or maybe they put on their roster just for this situation. So to me, receiver.
To you would be receiver as well. Okay. How would you grade yourselves yesterday, if we can go back to that? Do you want me to run through who we have on the roster?
Yeah, I mean, we can start, Tiff, we can start with some of these offensive positions, because I think there's a couple we missed on that we can probably highlight.
So running back position was something we talked about yesterday. I know you guys had a lot to say about Jace McClellan, who is on the roster. So you have Bijan, Tyler Allgeier, Avery Williams, and Jace McClellan.
Yeah, I think the question was always going to be, do you keep three or four? And I was of the thought, and I know Mark Raimondi was yesterday, whose roster we read, Jace McClellan was going to get the edge in that fourth running back spot if they were going to keep one, because he is a draft pick and because there's some recency bias there in terms of other teams scouting him and can you sneak him through. And so I think that's kind of what it came down to me. I don't know that Jace, and look, I'm a massive Jace fan from his time in Alabama. I don't know that he showed something in preseason that leads you to believe, boy, we have to have him on the roster. But nonetheless, I think he can grow and develop in that role. I don't think Avery Williams is your first running back in, Bo, if you're going to go to a third running back, and therefore Jace McClellan kind of falls in that spot.
Well, I think you're right about the first part, and I would say I'm not sure if Jace McClellan would be active on game day next Sunday. Now, the one thing I think he has going for him is the fact that you only kept five receivers, so and you only kept, I think, five cornerbacks and four safeties. So you got to have guys that can do what those positions, similar to those positions, to play special teams. So in that spot, I think Jace McClellan could be active after I've talked myself out of it initially and back in.
Now you're back in.
Pivot. Yeah. Pivot.
But to that point, that to
you
me.
You said self?
Listen to yourself. But yeah, I think that's all I think that's all accurate. And then there's how many offensive linemen are you going to carry on game day? Defensive linemen. Go ahead. I know you want to get the offensive linemen.
I did for Mike's sake here, and this looks a little different than what Raimondi had on his list, and then also kind of what you guys were talking about yesterday. Of course, Chris Lindstrom, Jake Matthews, Drew Dahlman, Caleb McGarry, Matthew Bergeron, Storm Norton, Ryan Neuzel, Kyle Hinton, and Javon Gwynn.
It's the ninth name, right? I mean, Javon Gwynn was kind of that guy that you wondered. And let's just say this. I do think Javon Gwynn brings some flexibility. I think if you wanted to go with seven game day spots for the offensive line, Javon Gwynn gives you the ability to obviously play center and play guard. I don't know that you want that. I don't know that you'd obviously rather have Ryan Neuzel in that situation. But Javon Gwynn makes this roster – and I think he just gives you flexibility up front that you don't have with anybody else. Kyle Hinton's not going to play center.
Well, I think Ryan
Neuzel's not going to play guard.
I actually staunchly disagree there. I think Ryan Neuzel is your swing interior player. We've seen him fill in. Look, whether he did it great or not is one thing, but we've seen him fill in at guard before. To me, Ryan Neuzel is your swing interior player, and Storm Norton is your swing tackle. And those are the two that I would be expect to be active. I think Javon Gwynn's the last guy off the last offensive lineman that would be active, in all honesty. And I think Kyle Hinton is behind him. I think Neusel and Norton are your 1A, 1B as far as if you're going to have seven active. That's my thought, just based on what I've seen in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I just don't know that he showed enough specifically at any one position to say, man, we got to keep him around. They don't have a ton of draft capital invested in him.
He showed a lot more to me than Javon Gwynn.
That's who I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. So if he's not available, available as being a possible interior swing guy, then I'm like, I don't know.
But you're happy with nine, because nine was the number you said you would have liked to have seen, I believe.
I think it's important. I think it's important to have nine quality guys. Who those nine are, I think, kind of gets up for grabs. I think there was a number. I mean, I thought Stuber played well during preseason, and yet he found himself cut yesterday. So I think there's a lot of questions to be asked there. There's not a guard tackle flex in this group. There's not a guy that you think can play guard and tackle. You got your interior guys in Storm Norton. So it'll be interesting to see how that all pans out.
All right, when we come back, we'll break down the other side of the ball. Yes, defense. Stay with us here. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. This is The Morning Shift. We'll be right back on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
What are the haps? Start the day the right way with The Morning Shift.
With Tiffany, Mike, and Bo.
All right.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We are back here on The Morning Shift, and I just want to pat myself on the back because I went straight into talking about the Falcons 53-man roster, and I spared everybody having to listen to your tales about your little racing league last night.
I wasn't going to talk about it.
Thank you, Dylan. Thank you.
Yeah, I wasn't going to talk about it.
I feel attacked.
Yeah, I mean,
is it just...
I'm used to not being able to talk about it because I don't talk about when I win. Usually I wait and see if anybody will congratulate me, and that never happens, so I wasn't going to talk about it anyways.
Yeah, you know what? You swept one of the harder places to win at, which is Darlington.
Feel good about it, man. Not
which is pretty impressive. I was frustrated.
Well, didn't go as planned.
Mike, can I be the first at least to tell you congratulations
thank
on your
you,
win, man.
Appreciate you being the hype man for my glass.
I'll just throw one out there, too. Congratulations.
Yeah thanks. It means a lot. You know what I mean?
I told him congratulations last night. I was actually behind him when I saw him make the pass for the lead. And, I could have forced my way back, but I just kind of stayed back on that one. I didn't try to get a lap back.
You tried to force your way back.
I did.
Interesting.
Won't go in there.
I did. Door bumper clear. I did not hear those words last night when I got next to our boy Doug.
You know what I don't see is you guys patting yourselves on the back for your Falcons roster selections yesterday. We did talk about offense. Now it's time to talk about the defensive side of the football. And we can start with the D-line. Grady Jarrett, David Onyemata, Zach Harrison, Taquan Graham, Eddie Goldman, Kentavious Street, Ruka Rororo, Brandon Dorlus, and James Smith-Williams. That is your defensive line as the Falcons have set their 53-man roster.
I mean, the most interesting part of this is that James Smith-Williams is listed as a defensive lineman.
They have a number that they could only have so many outside linebackers?
Yeah.
Alarm bells are going off. Too many linebackers in there. Can't have nine. No, I mean, I think this is pretty spot on. I'm still shocked that the number is – it's really eight. James Smith-Williams is an outside linebacker. It's really eight. So I think when you look at it that way, it's just a lot of people for three spots. It's a lot of people for three spots. Now, I think they're all very unique. Like we talked about, there's the two rooks that were going to make that because of draft value. There's veterans in there to play a ton of snaps. Grady Jarrett, obviously David Onyemata. Taquan Graham, I think when he is healthy and has shown that he's healthy, he's unique in and of himself. And then Eddie Goldman, who is such a question mark that has retired numerous times over the last couple of years. That comes out of retirement again and comes back into training camp, and suddenly he's on the roster, but he's as close to a Vince Wilfork, Casey Hampton kind of guy as you're going to see in this Falcons defense, and he's just anchoring the middle. So they're all very unique in what they bring. I don't know that we swung and missed on any of those guys, but nonetheless, it's still shocking to see a number of eight defensive linemen for three spots in a 3-4.
It's kind of your Forrest Gump moment. I met the president again. with Eddie Goldman retired again, and he came back. So, I honestly, the only surprise to me is exactly what Mike just said about the James Smith Williams and how he's listed. However, I think it's interesting when you look at how all these guys can be used, Tiffany, is you have Onyemata and Eddie Goldman are primarily middle, you know, that they're going to be that middle guy, right? That zero or maybe that one technique, right? I mean, that's kind of what you would look at these guys at. And then you got TQ and Harrison and Grady and Kentavious Street. And I'm just looking at guys I think are going to see the most playing time right off the bat. And they're going to play opposite, you know, on the other side of Onyemata and Goldman and whatever situation it is. And then you got Rook and Dorlis, who to me are guys that can move all – they can kind of play on every spot of the line. And I know Grady can play – it could play on every spot of the defensive line as well in what a 3-4 is going to be. But the fact to me is he's the most effective if he doesn't have to be moved inside, right?
Yeah.
So – that's it for me. And then James Smith Williams is an outlier who's really an outside linebacker, and that gets him more over the edge. And those linebackers, what you would consider outside linebackers to interior linebackers, there's no surprises for me there at all. There's just none. I think the one question I would ask is, what does D'Angelo Malone see when he's actually on the field with a defense? Where is he actually playing? That would be the one question I'd have. And it's not a question as of why did you keep him. It's more of a question of how are you going to use him.
All right, let's get your check on some college football.
It's time to talk college football on The Morning Shift. Brought to you by Window Nation. Fight the February frigid season with 50% off your new windows from Window Nation. Plus, make no payments for 2 years. Visit windownation.com. Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Cannot wait to hear that music this weekend with week one of college football on deck. And your Georgia Bulldogs, number one team in the land, they take on Clemson, number 14. Some question marks surrounding Georgia when it comes to the offensive side of the ball, in particular with their running backs. And so we'll start with this. With tailback Roderick Robinson, he recently underwent surgery to repair a toe injury. Smart confirmed on Monday that is what took place. And so he said he would probably be week to week. He isn't expected to play against the Tigers on Saturday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But the other big, big question mark looming for the Dogs, that is around running back Trevor Etienne. And Kirby Smart not saying much about the Florida transfer and his status on Saturday.
Excited about all those guys. I don't really talk about any of the other stuff.
Excited about all the opportunity to play.
Yes, he would not confirm whether or not he will be available, so we're waiting to see what his status will be on Saturday.
I think that it's funny because I think if you're a fan of this program, you probably have looked into Kirby's words before. And there's probably a precedent that was set somewhere along the line of, you know, he did or did not talk about somebody that might or might not have been suspended. I used to be able to see, speak Sabanese at Alabama. I could tell by the way the question was asked and the way he answered whether or not it was true or not. But, you know, it's one of those things you obviously won't know for sure until Saturday. It'll be a noontime game. And they have plenty of depth, right, at the running back position. You would think that's a running team with a good offensive line. But, man, Trevor Etienne brings just a different dynamic. So,
yeah, I'm at the point with Georgia where they say, so-and-so is going to be out. And I go, is it going to make a difference? I mean, they're the deepest team in the country. The only team that can even come close to them is Ohio State with depth. And they spent a record $20 million in college free agency, if you will allow me to go there. I think they got what Cash Jones and Nate Frazier who did well,
and Branson Robinson I guess was another name that was thrown out there as another guy that could be able to go if he cannot. And just to what Mike you were just talking about suspension or you did mention that correct just a few seconds ago.
Right.
We know that Etienne was arrested on March 24th on charges of a DUI, reckless driving, and three other misdemeanors, and a plea agreement in July. Prosecutors dropped the DUI charge as he pleaded no contest to reckless driving and guilty to charges of underage possession of alcohol, failure to maintain lane, and a window tint violation. So he received 12 months of probation, a fine as well. And under the Georgia Athletic Department policy, he would have to miss 10% of the Bulldog season. So that's at least one game if he had been found guilty of a DUI. It's unclear whether the plea agreement changes that.
I got to be honest with you, if I was in his situation, a plea agreement seems like the best thing. I'm not a lawyer, but you do look at obviously being found guilty and things like that and some of the issues that come along with that. So, look, it's like I said, I don't know. I don't know how it changes. Kirby Smart's words to me, very insightful, of just, hey, I'm not going to talk about that, but I'm very excited for the guys that will have the opportunity to play on Saturday.
It's like, kind of makes you think he's not going to play with words like that.
That's my guess. That's my guess.
I just don't. I know maybe I'm being ridiculous with my thoughts here, but I just don't think it. I think Georgia wins with or without Etienne on the field. And he's a hell of a player. I love Trevor Etienne. I got to watch him for a couple of years down at Florida, and it felt like at times he was probably underused, and at times he was in a situation where it didn't matter how much he was used because of, you know, what they had around him. But I just think Georgia is good enough to win with or without him.
This story from ESPN, college football's spring transfer period is officially in danger of being eliminated after the NCAA's FBS and FCS oversight committees recommended the sport move to a single off-season notification of transfer window. So under the proposal, the 30-day transfer window in December would become the lone opportunity for FBS and FCS players to enter their name in the transfer portal if they are seeking a new school.
Hate it. I think they're trying to fix the wrong one. To me, you fix the portal in December. That close that one off, okay? Because you've got guys that are going to be in the middle of college playoff runs on teams transferring. And I just think that, to me, is the wrong time for the transfer portal. Get rid of that, the one in December. Keep the one in the spring. That's the thing for me, because that allows guys to... You know what? I stayed on during this playoff run. I didn't get traction during spring practice. Now I want to transfer. And I think that's the right time instead of the one in December. Do not like – I think this is wrong personally.
Well, maybe you guys will go here with me on this. I think it's flawed. But at this point, I'm looking at any rule that the NCAA is trying to put forth. And I'm like, okay, a rule. Good. Let's put some kind of rule on this.
You want
thing.
Some like it's just, sort of.
It's such a free for all. There's no guidelines for anything.
Yes,
so I'm like, dude, if the simplest guidelines to me would be, a move in the right direction. It just, I don't know. Like I said, I think it's flawed, but I think any kind of guideline right now would feel good. Would feel good as a college football fan to say there's some kind of rule out there that is not just absolute chaos at all times. So it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, speaking of a little bit of chaos in Georgia, well, we have a. Previously committed Bulldog now deciding to go to Georgia Tech. So this comes just days after Tech took down number 10 Florida State in Dublin. So Brent Key and his team have landed another big W in four-star defensive lineman Christian Garrett. So 6'4", 260-pound defensive tackle from Bogart, Georgia. He's the 135th ranked prospect in 2025. So he previously committed to Georgia before pulling his pledge and reopening his recruitment on August 11th. And now, he's on his way to Georgia Tech. He did tweet out, "I'm home." And that's it.
Yeah, I think if I remember right, this was when, was it Petty, the offensive lineman that
Yes.
When Petty.
Josh Petty.
When Josh Petty committed, I heard rumblings that Christian Garrett was going to go to Tech. And he had just decommitted from Georgia, and that this Tech was where he was going to end up. And I guess my rumblings were right. I don't want to put people's names out there.
You heard whispers.
Look, it was a highly trusted source who might even be listening at this moment, but I didn't want to put him out there and put him on blast. So that was right. Brent Key is rolling. In fact, I think Brent Key had the 33rd. Top recruiting class last year, and I think they're going to build on that and get even higher. And when a guy can coach like Key and his staff can, you got Buster Faulkner, who's a very good OC, who hopefully can stay at Tech for a couple years. I mean, I don't know what the ceiling is for Tech right now, but I know that it's a lot higher than it was under that other guy that took over from Temple.
What do you make of this Braves offense right now?
I'm cautiously optimistic.
Right, watching the movie The Replacements.
Hey, like... they are racking up the runs. We'll digest their latest W. And we've got a TB's timeout on the way. I'll be your travel guru. Follow me for more tips. Stay with us here on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yes, it is a lovely morning, isn't it?
Now, more of The Morning Shift
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Don't be cautiously, if I could say the word, optimistic about your Braves offense, Bo Morgan. Be happy about the win. They scored 4 runs in the 10th to secure a series victory over the Twins, 8-6. And, of course, Matt Olson continuing to light things up for this team.
Yeah, when he goes power oppo, you get kind of gets you little warm feeling inside. He hit one off the wall last night. Marcell Ozuna continues to stay hot. I mean, he's just so good this year. It's so fun to watch. Schwellenbach wasn't his best last night. He struggled. But he grinded through, didn't allow a run in 4 2/3, in probably the most pitches he's ever thrown as a starter.
Yeah.
He went over 100 last night.
Yeah, he did. CJ Nitkowski doing a good job on the broadcast of highlighting the fact this is only the second time this year that Schwellenbach's actually pitched on regular rest. So I think there probably was a small fatigue factor. He grinded through it, right? He didn't have his best stuff, and we talk about that with pitchers all the time. When they don't have their best stuff, can they grind through it and at least try to get you a quality start? He was right there on the doorstep. I thought that his stuff a lot of times can take over, but really the back end of the bullpen continues to struggle at times as well. And when you look at how this team has strung together victories, because they are somehow, we look at this team and go, man, they're hot.
Yeah,
it's crazy to think that. But you have a team of guys that are kind of plucky and have a little grit to them and can kind of get it done.
Well, the grit, what do you like about the fact that, okay, they had a 4-0 lead, but then the Twins rallied late, but then they still found a way to come back and get it done?
Well, I like the fact that they were able to get some clutch hitting in the 10th inning. Whether you like the ghost runner rule or not, they were able to put 4 runs up in the 10th inning. I like the fact that Whit Merrifield has been phenomenal, honestly, since he became a Brave. There's so much to like. I like the fact that they're 8-2 in their last 10, and they have won 5 straight series, dating back all the way back to after that Colorado that opened that West Coast trip, where they lost 2 of 3 on the weekend series, and then they beat the Giants 3 of 4, they beat the Angels 2 of 3, they came home, beat the Phils 2 of 3, then the Nats 2 of 3, and now the Twins, they've won two.
Like
Kirk Cousins and the Falcons stiff during training camp. their word of the year was, we just got to keep stacking days. The Braves are stacking days.
Real quick, do you not think that Jared Kelnick was spared a lot of ire from Braves fans after not scoring on Marcell Ozuna's double, when Marcell Ozuna is just literally rounding first, telling him to go home, and yet he sticks at third? He ends up coming home, obviously, on a gritty play and a high throw, but nonetheless, I was like, man, that guy's kind of lucky that it ended up that way with Matt Olson's ground out.
Yeah, he was. I also think Tuiasa Sopo out there would have caught a lot of heat if they lose that game by like a run, like say they lose 5-4,
right,
and then they don't score there. I think he'd have caught heat as well, especially from. And look, nobody loves Ron Washington as much as I do, but the Ron Washington fan club that wants to make everything about him. And that why he's not here, and that's suddenly why the Braves have like 7 guys on the – 7 starters who spent time on the IL or whatever. But, yeah, I do believe that. But he – Kelnick, you said gritty. I mean, I think you could use some other words with testicular fortitude for the way he came home on that ground ball to what was it, short or second?
Yeah. I just think that – he probably got saved a little bit. That's all I'm saying.
Let's hit a TV's timeout.
Now listen up.
Now let's take a look at what's going on in Tiffany's world.
This ain't funny.
With TV's timeout on The Morning Shift.
Mike, your accent's pretty clear. I really could ask Bo this question because I feel like you could relate to some degree. I'm going back to covering the Olympics assigned to France. Not every player on that team spoke English. Also, I failed at life by not knowing another language. So it's on me.
Babble.
So we were only, you know, Duolingo, whatever it is. So we only were able to speak to a couple players, mainly just two, on France, in addition to their coach, Thierry Henry. So I am in the middle of an interview. Let me ask, do I have an accent?
Were you talking with your TV voice or no?
I mean, I was just talking.
She's on TV,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Do I have, I mean,
I don't think you
being professional. I'm doing an interview.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't think you do.
I don't think you do. I think you sound
You sound like somebody who's lived in a lot of places in the United States, which you have.
That's fair. Yeah.
Which gives you a neutral accent, I think.
So Mike kind of has a neutral accent as well. Even, I mean, you're from Florida. So that's kind of like a.
I too am well cultured in the United States.
Well, no,
so
you're
I ask you, Bo, has anyone, have you ever opened up your mouth, said something to someone, and then they're like, where are you from?
Where are you from?
Yeah, quite often. I remember when I remember the first time in Colorado, and I was in Breckenridge, Tiff. And I go, hey, can I get a sweet tea? And she goes, sweet tea. She goes, we have tea, and there's the sweet and low. And I go, just give me a Coke.
See, so basically that was me in France talking to French player Jean-Philippe Mateta, the goal scorer.
Mateta.
So I talk like Bo. So, and this happened to be not just a conversation on the side. It was a conversation we were recording, being fed back to the powers that be here in the States at NBC. And so I'm asking him about goal scoring. You know, I'm asking him about his knack for finding the back of the goal. But as the word knack leaves my mouth, I'm thinking I probably shouldn't have said that because his English isn't as strong as some of the others. And so he stops and looks at me mid-interview and gives me the head tilt. Like a
dog when you're saying, you want to go for a walk?
So my head, I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no. So then I'm like, Nack, you're good at scoring. So I'm dressed. So he's like looking at me, and then he's like, why I'm good at goal scoring. He's like, well, it's my job. And like he goes on, and it's very animated. And so we laugh about it. It's a funny moment. He walks on in soccer at you know, Olympics at this level. And I imagine at FIFA 2, the World Cup, it's like a mixed zone. So you're doing interviews in a row. You only get a handful of questions because the players are required to stop by every camera that is there. So they march him down the line. So Jean-Philippe Mateta goes on to his next interview. I'm waiting to start mine. He's being asked a question in the middle of his interview. I just so happen to turn. And he turns at mid-interview and looks at me. And he's like, your accent.
Yeah.
Where are you from? I was like, America, the U.S. He's like, that explains it. So,
dang.
Wow.
But it was it was still like we were laughing. It was funny.
Yeah.
Welcome, it was still like, I used a funny word that probably is not used very much over there.
I think knack might be, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
British.
I always thought I think it's kind of a country southern word. I mean, I thought it's a word that I've used a lot. It's funny that you had a moment in life happen to you that happens to me like every day. I mean, that happens all the time.
That rarely happens to me.
I mean,
I will say I am curious. Like, did he really need to ask you where you're from, or did he know you're from
America?
I think
he was being very he was being very playful in the moment,
maybe,
but it was
flirty.
Just funny to stop it. It was just funny that it was. He's in the middle of the next interview, but he turns slowly and looks back at me.
I just think it's interesting because I feel like I could definitely pick out somebody that was French. You know what I mean? Like, I'd be like, oh, you're French. You know what I mean? But it's funny. I wonder if it's the same way around with people that are American.
You know? It's,
I don't know. I guess according to him, no.
According
where are
him,
you from?
According
what
to Jean-Philippe, no. I was wrong. So, I'm going to go learn another language after the football season.
French or no?
French is a
Spanish.
Beautiful language, but
it
I
is.
Think it would be very hard
Seems
to.
Difficult. Yeah,
it's
correct.
Very difficult.
Correct.
I'm going to stay in my lane. So, this hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm, where there's no being lost in translation when it comes to the Falcons' 53-man roster. It is set. We will digest and discuss next when we come back on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.